Great teacher, great community activist, civil rights leader, mentor, friend, big brother, and family member, Mr. Willie Curry. Thank you for coming in with us tonight. Thank you. How are you?
Fine, thank you, sir. How are you doing?
I'm excellent, my brother. It's such an honor and privilege to have you with us tonight. So many fond memories of you in my mind as a child, watching you in the civil rights movement of the 60s, still permeate my consciousness and gives me a driving force to continue. Not to mention how you taught us how to play football. So I still remember some of the moves my mind does, but my body doesn't. So it's an honor to have you in the room with us tonight.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, I'm flattered that you think of me in that regard. I've been out here for a long time, and I haven't gotten tired yet. As is my motto, I know no other way to live. You know.
Oh wow.
Mm-hmm. I know no other way to live. You know, I'm not all of that. I'm just a child of God who's trying to do one of the things that Dr. Martin Luther King emphasized, and it really stuck with me. You know, don't mention that I'm a Vietnam veteran. Don't mention that I'm a civil rights person who. For human rights and civil rights, just mentioned that I tried to help somebody, and that's what it's about.
Certainly. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Sister Bertha, it is such an honor to have you with us tonight as one
Thank
of our
you.
Guests.
Thank you very
I'm
much.
So excited. We're not on the air yet. I haven't heard our people come in just yet, so I do see my brother and co-laborer with us in the room. Perhaps he will come. He is one of the constructors and architects of this line and this broadcast, this fellowship mm-hmm. that we enjoyed for the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take him off mute right now and allow him the privilege of introducing you. Dr. Mills. Dr. Mills. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All right.
The radio is on.
We're on radio?
Yeah, I just popped over there. It's got the sound in there, so I'm on my phone right now. But,
I didn't know it was on. I didn't hear the countdown. Well, I tell you what, before you introduce our special guest, let's do this. Let's do this before we start, because if I don't do this, Sister Georgia will... Sound the horn in Zion, let peace and liberty reign. Proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. Proclaim liberty throughout all the land. Sound the shofar. And you just got to know this right here. You just got to
know. I know that's right.
I am Brother Khalif Sapnat Pioneer El, and you are in the Royal Priesthood Bible Prayer and Fellowship Room with Dania El and Mr. Willie Curry and Sister Bertha tonight as our special guest. Now listen to this all-important message. Like things are finally coming around. Yeah. I know we've got a long, long way to go. Yeah. And where we end up, I don't know. But we won't let nothing hold us.
But now it looks like things are finally coming around.
Well, let's jump right in tonight. Thank you, those of you that are in BBS Radio listening audience, and those of you that are in the Royal Priesthood Bible Prayer and Fellowship Room. We have been talking about wealth creation through procreation of the gods. Let me repeat that. Yes, I said it. Wealth creation through procreation of the gods. We have been on this subject for about 3 weeks now, and we're excited tonight because we want to take a very careful and compassionate, as well as conscientious and cognitive look at reimagining the black man, as we discussed tonight, the black man, very sensitive subject, and the future structure of the African-American family, and not only just those that are in African-American culture, but the African family as a whole, as a pan-Africanism mindset begins to settle in with us. So we're excited tonight. And I see my brother is there from Shreveport. I always have to say hello to him and just hear his voice before I get started. Hey, Abednego L.
Hey, Bishop. Good to be here.
Shadrach, Meshach, and a bad Negro. All right, my brother. You know what? You know the host code. We have Mr. Willie Curry from Homer, from my hometown, on the line with us tonight. Sister Berta and Dr. Mills is going to come right now. He's going to introduce our special guests and give. And then I'll come back and tell you a little bit about where we need to go, where I plan to go tonight, and we'll see what our special guests have to say about our subject tonight.
Praise to the Most High, to all of you who are present tonight here in the Royal Priesthood Nation, Prayer Bible Fellowship Line. I thank the Most High for allowing me to have the privilege to introduce a lady that I met a few weeks ago. Very rare, as you are on Facebook, do you get a chance to talk with people. You see their posts, you look at their conscious level, and she just was drawn to me by her post, and I think some of my posts drew her toward me, and I had a conversation, and we become a great friend as well as brother and sister. And I'm very impressed with what she has experienced in her lifetime. She was part of a nation building mechanism. She knows what it takes to build a nation. She knows what it takes to bring our people back from our amnesia. And that's exactly what has happened. As I looked at most of the posts that I put up today, I'm not a racist, but I'm very racial. I believe in my race, and I've seen across the years, a lot of people don't realize that I put up some pictures not long ago of some little kids picking cotton in Texas here back in the 60s. Well, I was one of those little kids. I experienced all that type of stuff out there with the prejudice and the hatred and so forth. I experienced that as a child. I was sitting at my desk in West Texas. You guys remember here not too long ago that fertilizer plant blew up. Well, that was my home for about 7 years, right there. My father pastored there, and I remember sitting at the desk at the school when they assassinated John F. Kennedy. And I tell you, I'll never forget it. And I saw all of the hatred and so forth. It so happened to happen about 70 miles from me, so I've been very conscious for a long time, from a child on up. But now I see some glimmers of hope, because of the fact that so many of us who have awakened. And I'm so thankful to have met
this conference is being recorded.
She has a wealth of knowledge. She has a son that teaches at the Shape Center in Houston, very, very conscious young man. And maybe we'll get a chance to get him on sometime. So I want to introduce y'all. I'm just going to introduce her as Berta. She has a lot of wealth of knowledge. I'm looking forward to the conversation tonight. I'm going to get off for a few minutes, Khalif. I'm going to try to catch up with another lady. You haven't got a chance to meet her yet, but her name is Betty Stitt. She was just crowned as a chief of the Kippewa tribe in Georgia. I'm getting ready to try to contact her and try to get her on call tonight. So, Bertha, glad to have you tonight. Just know you're with family.
And thank you very much.
Thank you for allowing you to come on tonight to share your experiences with the room tonight.
No. Thank you. Thank you so much. Go ahead.
Where do you want me to start?
I'm going to bring you in just in a moment, as we proceed to move forward here. Our planet is actually, everyone, I wanted to say that our planet is moving through space at a very rapid speed, terrific speed. Our planet is on its way someplace. We have to, in our deliberations, understand that this planet that we're on is moving through space at a very tremendous speed, through the vastness of space. And we are headed somewhere. And it would seem that white men are attempting to reduce the number of black men before we reach an incalculable point, if not eliminate them altogether.
Yeah.
It's also obvious from their policies and programs and behavior that we can plainly see that's a very difficult and sensitive subject to talk about. But nonetheless, we can see it. And so we approach it with compassion tonight and with spiritual equilibrium, because we can see this. It's evidenced in the ingesting of black men's organs, the missing organs that are coming up from drive-by shootings, from our morgues, from arbitrary clandestine murders that are happening that we sometimes have no explanation for. The black man's organs, his bodily tissue plan, parenthood. And I want to approach this with our white European audience, having roots myself into the European race with a European grandfather. But nonetheless, unashamedly, with my roots in Africa through my mother.
Right.
It is something that we must talk about and we must approach. Again, I say, with all conscientiousness and compassion. So I shall attempt to do that, because it seems that there has been an acceleration. There has been a takeoff in this need for melanin. Now, let me say this. Because the black man has the most amount of melanin of all beings on this planet, human beings. He's melanin enriched. Let's not play about what this fight is all about. So therefore, we must understand a few things. That melanin theft, we must understand and learn what it is. We must learn how to protect melanin. We must learn how to regulate it and nurture it. We must learn what melanin's capacity and what melanin can do and why there is this fight. Now, I'm just pulling down the curtains. I'm just pulling off the gloves for a moment. And tonight I wanted to talk about, under this wealth creation through procreation of the gods, this subject of reimagining the black man. He has been characterized, stereotyped, labeled as dysfunctional. He's been labeled as deviant, decadent, delinquent, and dead. Dr. Haki Mahabuti, in his book, Black Men, Obsolete, Single, and Dangerous, serves as a foundation tonight for our discussion around reimagining the black man. And not only just reimagining him,
But reimagining him, if we had a scripture, I thought about a scripture. This is a Bible line. And I don't want to say two things, and then we're going to bring in our guests to start the conversation, because Brother Curry can speak to us concerning some of the things that he's seen and the missing bodies and unsolved murders. Hmm. But here is a passage found in Luke chapter 8. Okay. I want to mention this and mention last week, and then we'll bring our guest in. Jesus, in Luke chapter 8, verse 30, has just pronounced a benediction on a multitude of people that he had taught all day on one side of the sea. And after having pronounced this benediction in this story, or this classical epic drama that comes to us in the pages of the Bible, he crosses a life-threatening storm with his followers and disembarks on the other side of the seashore with one man who is demon-possessed, according to this narrative. He is disenfranchised. He has been classified as a public enemy, as dangerous. He has been classified as deviant, dysfunctional, demented, and dead. He's living in the graveyard. Mm-hmm. And when I saw him, I saw the black man. Mm-hmm. But I want to reimagine the black man. I saw the many portraits of the black man as it has been painted in our contemporary culture right here in Luke chapter 8. And this is what Jesus says to him in verse number 30. What is your name? And he said, Legion, because many devils were entered into him. And verse 39 says, return to your own house, listen to this, and show how great things God has done for you. This is after he has been healed by an encounter with Jesus of the Bible. Now, to reimagine the black man in the minds of America, to reimagine the black man, to get new images of him inside of the scope of our cultural framework and conditioning, is going to require some effort on the part of all of those in Western culture and in the Americas and in the islands and then subsequently throughout the world.
Mm.
Last week, we looked at this man's potential through his procreative ability as a divine gift rather than looking at it as a sexual deviant who's dysfunctional. By looking at his innate capacities from whom these gifts came through the lenses of the Bible, it is clear through the lenses of the Bible that based upon this black man's design, he will not be able to function in a European culture mindset, in particular, as it relates to the social structure that we find ourselves constricted within, because it cannot contain his unique gifts, abilities, and talents. He has been divinely endowed. He is the oldest creature, human, not creature, pardon me. He's the oldest being on the planet. He's more evolved. He's spent more time in the sun. His physiology, his psyche, his emotional stratus, as well as his spirit, has been on the planet longer than any other being. And we must give consideration to reimagining him now as more than a deadbeat dad, as more than a trifling hip-hopper who wears his breeches and his pants below his waist showing his underwear. We must get some new images of him other than the ones that are being portrayed to us by the media that is reinforcing him as a homosexual.
All right.
Reinforced by legislation. What
is this culture that we're in that cuts against the grain of his very genealogical engineered anatomy. He is engineered and genealogically engineered with certain innate abilities, capacities, and he is the oldest being on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
He's further evolved. So in this story that I've read to you, Jesus tells him to go home. Go to your house, he says. He says, go to your own house. And let me just preach here for a minute since I'm a preacher. I'm a preacher. Go to your house and take the portrait and the painting down that your culture has painted of you and all of these negative stereotypes. And since you're going to your house, take the picture from my house that I've shown you what you're supposed to look like. This is your family now. This is your family. You come to my house and you see where you get your traits from, your abilities, your talents from. Hang this picture that you got out of my house back in your house. And when you leave your house, go to the schoolhouse and exchange the picture that they painted you as a dropout, as not being able to learn, as dyslexic, as ADHD, that you have attention deficit disorders. Go to the jailhouse, where they said you're a criminal, where you've been marginalized, pseudo-speciated, and you've been criminalized, and hang this picture. Let's reimagine you in the courthouse. Let's reimagine you in the White House. And most importantly, let's reimagine you in the lighthouse in the church, in a new light, a new reflection, not based on the culture that you're in, which does not celebrate your particular gifts and abilities and talents, does not celebrate what nature has bestowed upon you, what creation has given you, and what the Creator has endowed you with. So with that consideration, as we look at some of the demographics, and I want to bring my guest in at this point, Sister Bertha, we have been discussing how, due to certain societal pathologies, black boys, according to the people of African descent International Alliance, black boys are born at a greater rate than black girls, but by the time that they're 18, there are 7 black girls to 1 black boy because of suicides, homosexuality, because of this vociferous culture that we're in. Yeah. That works against who the black man is, that works to annihilate him, that works to constrict him and to restrain him, to kill him and to eliminate him and to remove him out of society. Black girls find themselves in a precarious situation that they outnumber the black men in America, boys, at 18, 7-1. Something is happening. We need a social structure that does not insult, that does not, that will cause, let me say it this way, that will ensure our genetic survival. Because if we keep going at this rate where we are now, we're on the verge of genetic extinction.
Yes.
So we have to rethink our social structures in terms of the African American family. And what I found in the Bible, Sister Bertha, is a model in Isaiah 4:1. And just so happens that this model fits the demographic and the research done by the people of African descent International Alliance. That there are, it says in Isaiah 4:1, in that day 7 women shall take a hold of 1 man, saying, we will buy our own food and our own clothes. Only let us have your name that we may take away our reproach or our shame. Something has happened that caused them great shame. But now we're fighting against our culture, Sister Bertha. We're fighting against legislation. We're fighting against legislation that's geared
and not necessarily geared for our genetic survival. So what must we do here? Tell us a little bit about your experience. Can you jump in the conversation right here and kind of talk to us a little bit about another culture maybe that we are not exposed to in the West?
Okay. I can talk to you about my experience dealing with Islamic community. I lived in an Islamic community for a while, almost 2 years in New York, in Brooklyn, New York. I lived in the Ansar Law community, and I experienced polygamy, and it was something that I accepted wholeheartedly because when I accepted the religion of Islam, I accepted wholeheartedly. So I accepted everything about the religion, and I was willing to not only love my child that I gave birth to, but I was willing to love other women's children because we took care of all the children together. We loved them all together as our own, you know, and we learned to live as a family. But you have to understand, in every relationship in polygamy, there's always going to be a little bit of jealousy among the women. But if this is something that you really believe in and want, it becomes a way of life, not just a religion, but a way of life. And we're taught to be a family. You know, we understand that we are a family, and a family is supposed to take care of one another and help one another. And I think that in today's society, not too many women, especially not too many black women, will accept that. But I think it will be a help to the black community because there's a lot of black women out there that are alone, not just by themselves, but with children. And it will help the family if they can come together as one, you know. So I'm ready for the questions. I know a lot of people have questions for me, you know.
Well, you know, in my book on page 17, My Nigga, I give a diagram of a family tree with Jacob and his wives, Leah and Rachel, and their two maids, Bilhah and Zilpah. Mm-hmm. Jacob is in a relationship there, and what he is doing here is nation building, which is a culture now in the Bible found in the 30th chapter, as we discussed last week in our Bibles. Of course, I know in the Quran, I heard Minister Farrakhan a few weeks ago as he stood in Washington, and he talked about this very openly and candidly about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and he had his children by his wives to come on stage.
Yeah.
And he talked about nation building. Mm-hmm. He talked about wealth creation through procreation, adding structure. And there are a couple of things that we need to say here. I don't want to get lost and go back too far into last week's lesson.
Mm-hmm.
But we do see this model where God, the Most High, has allowed this in the process of the social structuring of the building of capacity in a nation.
Mm-hmm.
We can see it. It's right there in the Genesis chapter 30. It happened. It's startling to most Christians to have this kind of conversation in America and to hear this. But now you have laid out a couple of challenges and a couple of dangers that in your conversation, just in the brief time you spoke, mm-hmm. that we are faced with. One is single parenting homes. I worked with the previous administration with a healthy marriage, strong family initiative for four years,
mm-hmm.
from 2003 to 2007. And I went around the country talking about strong families and healthy marriages. But I made a discovery while I was working and going around the country with Health and Human Service and the federal government, which, by the way, gave us $1.5 million, my organization, at that time. And I made a startling discovery that 75% of the children born in the black community are born to single-parent homes.
They do not have the balance of the male and female, and most of the time, it's the female trying to raise or to rear that child in an unbalanced environment, and we're losing our children because of a lack of balance, because now of something else that triggered that, which is that the black men are being systematically, systemically removed from society in a very strategic and surgical way. They're being removed deliberately by policies, by programs. They're being deliberately moved out of that structure. Deliberately moved by legislation, deliberately moved by policies and programs that are sometimes obvious and sometimes not so obvious. So what strategies do we have? Minister Farrakhan dealt with this. I'm dealing with it from a biblical standpoint. The other danger that I see beyond the children is the danger that is imposed, secondly, to that female and her exposure to a promiscuous lifestyle because of a deficiency in men and a surplus in women. So what we, and Mr. Minister Farrakhan was a little bit more bold than I was in calling out the preachers in Christendom or in Christianity or in the church. He's a little bit more bold than I was, than I am tonight, as he made a distinction between what is honorably structured and what happens anyway because of a shortage of men. And it happens in church, people. And let's get real about it. It happens. Right. Let's get real about it. It's going on. This promiscuity, this promiscuousness, this age that we're living in, this culture that we're living in, it's happening. And it's not just happening in an isolated pocket. It is happening all across the board, from the Pacific Ocean to the Atlantic, from New York to Los Angeles, from the Great Lakes to the Gulf. It is happening all over.
Brother Glenn?
Yes, sir.
Look out on your board and see if you see a 229 area code. That's Miss Betty. She is going to join the call.
Okay, thank you. So these dangers that we see, I want to bring Mr. Curry in now. Mr. Curry, see if I can. You said 22 what, Dr. Mills?
229.
Okay, well,
929. Yeah, 229-929.
I don't see it yet, Doc. Put your board up and watch for her if you can.
Okay. Let me go there. Be right back.
All right. I don't see her. So, Mr. Perry, you and I spoke about some of the things that are missing, some of the people that are missing, mysteriously come up missing, and these black unsolved murders. How is it that in a small town that I came from, Houma, Louisiana, could there be unsolved murders? I mean, because if you pour water out your back door in Houma, before the water hits the ground, somebody on the other side of town knows it. I mean, it's so small, you can't do anything in a town that small without people knowing it. How did this come about, Mr. Carey? Are you there?
I don't really know how it came about. I just know that it is. A couple of years ago, I started observing the death of a lot of people, and those deaths going unsolved. One case in particular that really motivated me to get in the streets, I wrote a series of articles, Murderers Walking Amongst Us. We had a young lady here about 3 years ago. She was walking down the street with her. She was 18 years old. 7 months pregnant, and she had an 18-month-old child. She's on the street one Sunday with her baby in the stroller and stuff, and automatically she just disappeared for no reason. You know, nobody know what happened to her. So a week or so after she disappeared, they found her 18-month-old baby in a creek about a mile and a half from where she lived. A couple weeks after that, they found her behind an old abandoned store. And nothing ever was said about it. You know, they said, well, we're going to look into it. This is going to be a case that's solved. A week or so before that, we had a black male that was killed in the detention center. They said he committed suicide. His nose was broken. His jaw was broken. His teeth was kicked in. And he had 6 fractures to his skull. He's supposed to have been put in a padded cell because he was recalcitrant and he was acting out. A couple months prior to that, my brother's baby's mother died in jail. And, they said she was on dope, you know, so I guess that justification to, you know, so who cares? A young man was walking home one Saturday night a couple years back. He was walking home, and he was the victim of a hit and run. He was only about 2 or 3 blocks from his home. On the other road that leads to Arkansas, another guy was killed. You know, by and large, what you're looking at, you're looking like over the last 5 or 6 years, we got approximately 20 murders that have been committed here that went unsolved. We just had an election here a couple 3 weeks ago. We just had an election, and the guy who's running for sheriff, what he does.
How many murders did you say you had? I missed that. Say that again.
21 over the last 5 years, unsolved.
Wow.
And all
that's,
of them either black males or black females.
That's unprecedented for a small town like that, isn't it?
Sir, yes, sir. And I wrote some articles.
What?
We had gone to this sheriff where we kind of irritated him. So why don't you look into it? Because a man who owned a store up in Summerfield, Louisiana, he was a police juryman. He was killed. So the sheriff, he was on TV crying. He was on Channel 12, Channel 6, and Channel 3. Said before the sun set into the Pacific, we're going to have somebody who killed this man. He went, got 2 young black males who would go to this man's store every day. They would come from Haynesville to go to Summerfield. They would sit in front of this man's store. They would bale hay. They would cut hay. They would cut grass. They would do a variety of jobs every day. And oftentimes, those 2 kids would not find work to do. And this man who owned that store, he would feed him, give him a pack of cigarettes or whatever. But one of the kids was so ill, he was so sick, and his medicine was so costly that the man would let him sleep behind the counter, you know. And oftentimes when they couldn't get a ride, the man who owned the store would take them halfway back to Haynesville. So when they couldn't find out who did, no money was missing, nothing was missing in the store. No money was found out on these young boys. So what they did, they went and got these young boys. The one that was so sick that his parish could not pay for the cost of his medication. So what they did, they put a leg monitor on him and let him out of jail. Okay, the first one that they convicted was a young man they sent to the penitentiary with life without the possibility of probation, parole, or suspension of sentence. The other one was convicted. He was given 10 years at hard labor. But no murder of any black person. We had a retired school teacher who was killed. Somebody burglarized his home and set the house on fire. Beat him up and set the house on fire. Nothing was ever done. You know, they let it go on, let it go on, let it go on, let it go on. On Pearl Street, which is a major street in the black community here, a young man was killed.
That is unprecedented, Brother Perry. And
yes, sir.
That is just only one of the many Hydra-headed weapons that are pointed in our direction. But the purpose of Ken, as I stated in the beginning of the call, is this battle for melanin. And I need to get this in right now, that the battle for melanin is what it is. We are moving at a tremendous speed in space. We're moving. We are on our way somewhere. And where we are headed, you will need melanin in your genotype to survive. There has been centuries and centuries of knowledge that people have known that this has existed, but now it has accelerated because of the severe weather patterns we have. We are moving along the galactic plane and in the photon belt of Pleiades and in the center of our galaxy with an Oort cloud, which we are in, which is dark matter, which you are going to need melanin in order to absorb and to assimilate and to keep this ascension process occurring in your genotype as our planet, our solar system, is ascending the galactic plane. So do not be confused about what this battle is about. I've got some good news for my ancestors from Europe.
I am Khalif Jafnat Pa'ania Hill, and I have broken the Bible code. I know the alchemist's sequential codes that will help non-melanin-enriched bodies to become melanin-enriched bodies. Let me say that again. I am Khalif Zafnat Pa'ania El. I am revealer of secret divine things. I have been given the code, sequential codes, that will help non-melanin-enriched bodies to produce, what am I saying? You do not have to assassinate black people for their melanin. Hidden within the Bible is a sequential genetic code that will help you. And I know I'm on the radio, and I know this is being recorded, and I know this is a bold statement, but I stand behind it. There is a sequential code hidden right in the Bible that will help you to produce melanin and non-melanated enriched bodies. The battle is about melanin. Dr. Abednego, I know you wanted me to take your mic off of mute. Your mic is open.
Well, good evening, Bishop. And
you're on the air, so you got to rush. You can't sound like a Baptist preacher. You got to bring it on.
Yeah, I wanted to see it earlier. You have passed by, and you're really back on the subject. So I'm going to allow you to keep talking.
No, bring it on. You're on the line. I want to hear you talk. Just talk fast.
Well, when the lady was talking about polygamy, you know, you had that in perfect harmony right there in Homer. Joe Abbott proved that it could work perfectly. He had a big house, and he had 12 small houses behind his house, and they were all his wives, and they lived in perfect harmony on the farm.
And Brother Joe Abbott was my great uncle.
That's right. Am I telling the truth, Hawkhead?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
And I am an Abbott, and at his funeral, they were all on the front bench, all 12 of them, dressed in white. Perfect harmony.
Think about the possibilities of nation building and the possibilities of unity with a structure that promotes a balance of male and female influences over our children. Think about how that brings our community together. What has disseminated, what has caused division and divisiveness in our communities was something called the Project by Donald Trump's father and Lyndon Baines Johnson after the Civil Rights Movement, where they began to build projects all around the country. And in these projects, what was the strategy? The female could be taken care of, but the male would have to be absent. So you had projects that were simply under female control without the presence of that male. And in many of these instances across this country, then drugs were placed into that community as they projected a long-term plan to create a pathology within the community that we are now reaping now a sad demographic where there are 7 women to every 1 black man at the age of 18. Now, that poses health risks, safety risks, that poses poverty, impoverishment risk. What I'm seeing is a return to a biblical culture, a spiritual African culture that will support unity and bring back into proper context. Now, there are some who are going to challenge this, but you're not challenging me or Mr. Minister Farrakhan. You're challenging nature. You're challenging the sacred text. You're challenging your own physiology. You're challenging the own instincts and burnings that are going within you, and you cannot live under the structure that we're under because those 6 women will have some other alternatives to look to other races for a mate.
or to look to themselves within their own gender or mate, which is lesbianism, or they've got some robots that they're planning to put into the community now.
Well, I mentioned it last week, though, what they're doing when China found out who they really are. It came from us. Look at the cozy relationship that they're building in Africa now, because what they did, they had a one-child policy, and they would abort the female, and they have so many males now, and those males are going into Africa and mating with our women in Africa now. We do have Ms. Betty Smith on the line. She is a Kippewa chief, and we're glad to have her on tonight along with our guest, Bertha. And I see Dr. Prince is on there. You want me to unmute him?
Yes, sir, you can. Bring Ms. Betty on. Ms. Betty, welcome.
Ms. Betty, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I've been listening. Good evening.
Q&A session started. Q&A session is over.
Go ahead, Ms. Betty. I'm sorry.
Hello? Greetings.
Okay,
Can I start now? What should I do?
Share with us about your research and who we really are. And go back. She has some very good information.
Yes. My name is Betty, and my Native American name is Flying Mink. Flying Mink. I've had the name Mink, thinking it's a nickname. I am one of the ancient Kitawa. The Kitawa people, I've learned of late, I did a talk at Morehouse College, originated as a Hassan tribe in West Africa more than 130,000 years ago. And they are now, the Kitawa village are now located in Ghana. And I met one of their sacred people of that Kitawa mound that left in Ghana. They're the Kitawa, is the mound builders. But the Kitawa people were the ancient black full-blooded Native Americans that the white man, that when they saw come across, the smoke coming across the ocean from North Carolina, they were the small, short, strong people. But they the Kitawa people became a mixture of five different tribes eventually. They were the ancient spiritual order. One part of them came out of Ethiopia, which is my grandmother's side, which they left 100,000 years ago. And this group of tribe of people were given all kind of consideration. And they were given the state of Georgia, which consists of Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi, and Tennessee used to be the Kitawa, Cherokee, Kitawa land. And what they did toward the end, they always made consideration because they were the one that the white man was doing interaction with originally. Mm-hmm. And they gave us land. The last piece of land they gave here is in Southwest Georgia, which in 1836, I have the complete history of what they did to us in 1836. In 1836, the Kitawa people, the full-blooded, black, full-blooded, ancient people that established the Freemason, the Prince Hall, you know, Randolph, all of them did this right here in Georgia. Everything that took place was a play out in Georgia, but they erased Georgia became hidden. So in 1836, they made us cede their land over to them, but they allow us, we call ourselves freemen. But our ancestor was so, Cherokee mean integrity. Kitawa is the tribe, a group of spiritual order, Cherokee, Creek, Choctaw, Chickasaw, and Seminole. They were all one group because they didn't marry, and his Cherokee Indian didn't marry within their tribe. So the five major tribes of black, full-blooded people, they love their woods. They call the woods people. They also call the Night Hawk Society, you know, the Kitawa Society, Night Hawk Kitawa Society. So the Southwest Georgia blacks established the Morehouse College. It was a really, the Cherokee blacks were high yellow, and many of them have claimed, they were claimed as white folks. But we took our land and gave us to Arkansas. If you get a chance to go and look at the Arkansas marriage, in 1837, they took us to Arkansas and gave us land on the lovely purchase. That's my great-great-grandfather. That's my direct descendant, the lovely purchase. They gave us some consideration again, but they gave us land that belonged to another tribe that became, and they gave us an agent. Now, why would they give us an agent that come all the way from Ireland called Major William Lewis Lovely? They brought him all the way from Ireland to look out for us, the black ancient Kitiwa people in Arkansas River. And they called it the Lovely Purchase. In 1837, they could not own land. Whites could, no one can own land unless you married a Native American woman because a matriarch owned the land in this area. So they took us down to Arkansas and married us off, our ancestors off to white and people, and brought us back to this area, and they took over our land. So as a result of marrying a Crete woman, basically Crete women owned this land mostly. The Crete women married the women, and the Crete, and then my ancestor graveyard, which I have now since went back.
May I ask you, may I respectfully ask you a question here?
Yes.
What was the social structure of the Chippewa? I am familiar with mound builders at Comedy Point in Louisiana, Winterville Mound in Mississippi, and Monk's Mound in St. Louis. I'm aware of all the mounds that our ancestors built, and were the indigenous people, the Yamasee and the...
Bishop, I just understand there's 2,500 different family tribes. When they came here, there were 100...
Could you hold one second? Someone is trying to get my attention. Hold on one second.
Yes, sir. This is Sister Hill.
Yes. Hey.
We have a few minutes before we are off the radio station. You need to inform some and remind others that we have PayPal button. That we have a PayPal button that's tied to your email. That's agapetruckingco@aol.com. agapetruckingco@aol.com. And in order to keep this information coming, this is how we can support it. I'm sorry. Okay.
Thank you so much. I never would have thought about that. Let me just say to those of you who are in the radio audience, we do not charge for our information. We finance this broadcast of ourselves. We do our research. We do all of this so that you don't have to. If you are led to donate and contribute to this work to keep it going, to help spread it worldwide, to continue the liberation of our people and the planet and all people, you can do so by helping to support by going to PayPal at Agape, that's AGAPE, trucking, TRUCKING, co@aol.com. There's a PayPal click feature there inside of the email address. We do appreciate. We do not charge. We do not charge. There's no charge for anything that we do. But we're thankful that you come. I see the chancellor from Ohio. Our Ohio chancellor is itching, biting at the bit to get in this conversation.
Thank you, sir. Good evening.
Hey, Jim.
How you doing? I'm fighting the cold a little bit, but nevertheless, we recognize the very presence and the very favor of God in our life.